Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit U, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and to discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leonard, your host. I'm a consultant to nonprofits, and I specialize in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations to help them make a stronger impact to their clients and communities, and you can find Nonprofit U on Facebook and Twitter. I encourage you to comment early and often using the hashtags NonprofitU, Building Sustainable Organizations, or Organizational Development. You can also leave comments on blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit_U. You'll find the Nonprofit U fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. The chat room is open, and you can post comments and questions. In order to use the chat room, you must open a listener-only account. You'll find a link to open the account on the episode page, and you can also email me questions at consulting@valeriefleonard.com or send messages through Facebook and Twitter. You'll find a Nonprofit U fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. We'll be taking questions by phone and from our chat room at about the 20-minute mark, and the call-in number is area code 347-884-8121. Today's episode is Building Sustainable Organizations, about ways organizations can strengthen their capacity to be powerful, productive, and profitable. Again, we encourage you to call in with questions and participate in live chats at about the 20-minute mark. The call-in number is area code 347-884-8121. Nonprofit professionals and community stakeholders are especially encouraged to call in and share your stories. The state of Illinois has about 36,000 registered nonprofit organizations that are eligible for tax exemption. These organizations are at various points in their development, and some are startups and will never achieve their full potential. Others are institutions that have stood the test of time for over 100 years. So what are the characteristics that separate sustainable organizations from the proverbial fly-by-night organizations, you know, the ones that are here today and gone tomorrow? The short answer is organizations that have long-term sustainability tend to exercise excellent stewardship, yield results, and have strong brands. So when we look at this episode, we're going to look at common characteristics of organizations that don't stand the test of time, and then we'll provide working definitions of powerful, productive, and profitable, just to make sure we're on the same page, and then we'll identify characteristics of powerful, productive, and profitable nonprofits, and then finally, we're going to share some strategies for organizations to get you there and then to stay there, most importantly. So we'll start with the negative first. So some of the common characteristics of organizations that don't stand the test of time, first and foremost, failure to stay current in their reporting requirements. So when we look at the state of Illinois, which is where I'm from, between 2010 and 2015, there were over 27,000 organizations that lost their tax exemption. Why did they lose it? Just because they didn't file their Form 990s on time. And your Form 990, that's the equivalent of an individual's 1040. It's like a 1040 for nonprofits. So when we look at that, that's about 5,500 organizations every year that lose their tax exemption just because they didn't fill out one piece of paper for 3 years in a row. And this says nothing for organizations that don't file payroll taxes or do their other reports that they may or may not even know about on an annual basis. Another characteristic of organizations that don't stand the test of time is their inability to change with the times. When they start out the organization, they may have a certain mission, certain target and clients, and then they may use certain programs and strategies to address those issues. The environment can change suddenly sometimes, and then they continue to serve the same clients in the same way. I can tell you from experience in the community where I live that things can change very suddenly. For example, back in 2007, 2006, I'm sorry, we had a developer, a nonprofit developer, that lost over 1,500 units of housing in one government action because he had so many building code violations. So the government came in, seized the prop, and they were empty for, you know, for about 4 years, you know, while they were repairing all the damage. So in that instance, and we're still recuperating, we lost over 6,000 people in one fell swoop along Douglas Boulevard. And there were a number of schools on that street, a number of nonprofit organizations, social service agencies. So as a result of this one action, not to mention, you know, there were mortgage foreclosures and whatnot going on too, but just as a result of that one action from the government, schools lost enrollment, and when they lose enrollment, they lose funding, you know, because they lost people. We also had the same situation with some social service agencies and youth service agencies. Many of them were challenged, you know, because they were losing clients. They had to go through serious strategic planning in order to figure out, you know, how are they going to position themselves during this period of change and how to deal with the new normal. And in fact, some public schools and some parochial schools had to close their doors, and the ones that are left had to be more creative about how they're going to use that empty space. You know, a number of them have partnered with social service agencies and government agencies in order to provide supportive services to students. Another characteristic of organizations that don't stand the test of time is they fail to take action. And at least if they take the action, they don't take it on a timely basis. And as a result, they stay stuck on a single issue. You know, one example is, you know, having board meetings where the same issue comes up, you know, for several months and there's no resolution to the issue. Sometimes this can be minor discussions, but I've seen cases where the issues can be to the way the organization is going to move forward or operate in the future. Things like whether or not to hire new staff, how to proceed with a fundraiser, or whether or not to buy new equipment that's going to save time and money. Another characteristic is the failure to put systems in place for accountability. So these can be automated financial systems, financial policies and procedures, programmatic policies and procedures, so that, you know, when leadership leaves, you know, these systems are still in place. And then they also may fail to put in procedures to track outcomes. So when you can't provide an accounting for money or document success, you know, it's very hard to raise funds. And just because people can't account for the money or they can't account for their activity does not necessarily mean that they're involved in some illegal or some shady activity. It just means it's not accounted for. But if you can't account for it, it didn't happen. And if you can't prove it happened, it's very, very hard to attract money. It's hard to attract very high-quality staff. So as a result, these organizations may languish, you know, at their beginning stages for years. Now, I've seen organizations after 10 years of operation still looking very much like startups. So now that we've talked about what, I guess, poor-performing organizations look like, what are some of the characteristics of powerful organizations? And then before we can talk about what powerful organizations are, we want to at least have a working definition so that we're all on the same page. So when I use the word powerful, you know, I'm using the Merriam-Webster definition. I'm looking at organizations that have the ability to control or influence people or things, and hopefully in a positive way. Organizations that have a strong effect on someone or something, and hopefully the someone would be their clients, and the some things would be things like the community or like some legislation that could really, really help the community. And powerful also means having great prestige. So when we look at the characteristics of powerful organizations, they tend to have the capacity to fulfill their missions or do what it is they set out to do in the first place when they were created. They also have the influence with their clients, in their communities, with other organizations, with elected officials and other stakeholders, you know, because it takes a whole village to make sure everything runs smoothly. They have strong brands. They make an impact on the lives of their clients and communities. And like I said before, hopefully it's a positive impact. And then most importantly, they affect sustainable change, not just one and done, but change to systems, change in the lives of people that they serve. So how do organizations get the power? I would compare organizations getting power to people who were in an airplane. They're in an airplane with small children. And remember, when you get on the plane, the stewardess or the attendant tells you, you know, if we ever go through rough times and you need oxygen, make sure you cover your own face, get your own mask first, and then you help the small child. So I would say that organizations that are powerful, they focus internally, getting their own systems together, making sure that they have their own stuff together, so to speak, before they go and try to make sweeping changes in the community. So they spend a good deal of time focusing on developing their leadership, you know, because everything rises and falls on leadership. You know, the stronger your leadership is, the higher the organization goes. If you don't have the leadership skills that you need now, invest on developing those leadership skills. They develop their boards to make sure their boards are working effectively. They develop their programs to make sure the programs have an impact on the clients and community. They make sure that they develop their management systems to make sure that they're supporting the programs and other fundraising activities. They make sure that they have strong financial systems in place so that they can track the money that's been donated to them. They make sure that they have the ability to raise the funds so that they can cover the cost of their programs, and they manage those funds judiciously. They make sure that they invest in people, the highest quality people that they can afford. And then they also make sure that they're very well networked, not only within the community, but, you know, amongst their clients, funders, elected officials. Again, like I said before, it takes a whole village to make sure things are running smoothly and making sure that you maximize impact. Powerful organizations solidify influence with key stakeholders. So that can be with clients, local community members, other organizations, elected officials, funders, and other stakeholders. Most importantly, they build trust and they follow through on the commitments with excellence. Powerful organizations have strong brands. And when I talk about brands, I'm talking about much more than logos. You know, we're not talking about logos. We're not necessarily talking about slogans, although those logos and slogans can conjure up pictures. But you want to make sure that the pictures that your logos and your slogans and your models conjure up are consistent with the image that's being projected. So basically, your brand is the total experience that stakeholders have with the organization from the beginning to the end. So any interaction they have with you through your website, make sure that that's current, and make sure that it tells the story that you'd like to have told. Any other communications, mail communication for fundraisers or just letting people know what's going on, the quality of your programs and services, and your ability to follow through on promises and claims. So I'd like to bring your attention to Jerry McLaughlin's his quote, and Jerry McLaughlin is a pretty strong marketeer in the for-profit sector. He says, brand is the perception someone holds in their head about you, a product, a service, an organization, a cause, or an idea. Brand building is the deliberate and skillful application of effort to create a desired perception in someone else's mind. And I'd like to add here, going to have a brand regardless of whether or not you cultivate it. So you may as well take the time to cultivate it, and because you don't want to leave the perception that people have of you, your products and services, left up to chance. Powerful organizations positively impact the lives of the clients and the communities they serve. And when we talk about impact, we're talking about the degree to which the lives and communities change as a result of the organization's programs, services, advocacy, and any other intervention. So ideally, you want to make sure that the impact is measurable, and not only is it measurable, but it's actually measured, and that you document it and you communicate it regularly. Like I said, I'm from Chicago. We do these things early and often, and organizations really need to make sure that they communicate their successes early and often so that your name becomes symbolic with success. Your name is symbolic with change. Your name is symbolic with the impact you have on the community. So with that, you want to make sure that you can affect sustainable change. So powerful organizations affect sustainable change not only externally with their clients and community, but they impact change internally. And they don't wait for a crisis to happen. They're not necessarily driven by external pressures to change. Your powerful and proactive organizations, they're always studying the tea leaves, so to speak. They're looking at trends in the community, and they position themselves, you know, 2 and 3 steps ahead of the game so that they're not necessarily, you know, caught behind the eight ball. Sustainable change, it requires a clear and a shared vision. It also requires capacity for change, actionable first steps, leadership that models the way, because you don't want to have a situation where people say, do as I say and not as I do, because that goes nowhere. And you want to have reinforcement and evaluation of programs and processes. And you want to make sure that you're doing continuous improvement. So you take the information that you get from your evaluation process and you feed that back into your programs and your processes. Powerful organizations, they don't necessarily wait for Springfield or wait for Washington to take action. They're influencing legislation all the time, you know, not necessarily to impact their personal organizations, but to impact the entire sector, to create an environment that's more favorable for nonprofits. So that could be the tax treatment of donations, you know, on the federal level, and locally, you know, it could be something as simple as, you know, how are you going to count, you know, ex-offenders, whether they'll be counted locally at home or will they be counted, you know, in the prison where they're located. All right. And powerful organizations also enter into collaborations. So they do this not only to save costs, but they want to create greater continuums of care because, you know, they're being asked to do much more with much less. So it helps to create collaboration where organizations are doing just a part of what's necessary to treat one client and create a continuum. And then they want to maximize impact to the community. So they tend to partner with organizations that have similar values, goals, and objectives. So next we want to look at productive organizations. And when I talk about productive organizations, again, I'm using the Merriam-Webster definition, and productive in this case means yielding results, benefits, or profits. And it's the ability to yield in large amounts. So productive organizations, as you can imagine, they do a lot. And one of the things that they do is develop a strategic plan. And they make sure that once that plan is developed, They align all the programs, the organization's resources, all their processes to the organization's mission, vision, values, goals, objectives, and strategies. And they also standardize best practices and systems and processes, and they invest in essential people and processes. So they're spending probably about 80% of their resources where they can get the biggest bang for their buck. They're actively managing their costs. They're constantly measuring progress and reporting it. They're streamlining procedures and processes so that they can save money, do more with less. They're maintaining systems of quality control to make sure that there's consistency in service, to make sure that they can maximize their impact. And they also have performance management systems in place to make sure that their programs as well as their processes, you know, like financial management, fundraising, are moving smoothly. And then they create benchmarks so that they can measure their progress against, you know, the industry standards to make sure that, you know, they're performing up to snuff. And they serve significant numbers of clients for relatively small amounts of money. So they tend to be not necessarily the lowest cost, but they tend to have their costs contained, you know, in terms of cost per client. They focus on outcomes, which means, you know, they're looking at how their work actually impacts the community and people. They have strong program logic models. And when I talk about logic models, I'm talking about, you know, looking at the situation, creating goals and objectives to address the issues that they uncover, looking at the resources that they need in order to do the work that they do to address the goals and objectives and other issues. They also, not only are they looking at activities, but they're looking at the outcomes. What is it that they want to see change? How do they know that they have change in place? What are the outcome measures, and how often are they going to measure the change? And then once they know what has been changed, you know, what's working and what's not working, they evaluate that process, and they use the information to constantly improve the organization. They also create dashboards, you know, so that they can look at a glance. Hopefully they're looking at this pretty often, at how well organizations or how well their organization and program is performing. And then they also engage in outcome evaluation and process evaluation. And I'm going to, you know, pause for a minute and focus on outcome and process evaluation. So when organizations perform outcome evaluation, they're looking at how effective the organization is in producing change. And when I say producing change, you know, what's changed in the client? What's changed in the community as a result of their program? So they tend to focus on how much of a difference the program made for them. So when we look at an example for a smoking cessation program, some questions might include, did the program succeed in helping people stop smoking? Was the program more successful with certain groups of people than with others? And what aspects of the programs did participants find had the greatest benefit? So when we look at process evaluation, we're not necessarily looking at change, but we're looking at how an organization develops this infrastructure and how the infrastructure helps to achieve the desired changes or outcomes. And when we talk about infrastructure, we're talking about organization structure, decision-making, management systems, supporting programs like communications and marketing, and even fund development in order to get to the outcomes that everybody wants to achieve. The focus of a process evaluation is on the types and quantities of services delivered, the beneficiaries of those services, the resources used to deliver the services, the practical problems encountered, and the ways the problems were resolved. So if we take this a step further and look at some of the questions we might ask, what specific interventions were put into place by the program in order to fight the problem being tackled? Did the interventions work? Did they not? Why or why not? You know, were they successful? What can we learn from this? What were the kinds of problems encountered in delivering the program or services? Were there enough resources from the beginning to do it well? Was it well managed? Were staff trained or educated to the right level of the program design? And is there skill at facilitating the program processes from the beginning to the end? And when we talk about processes, you know, for example, you might talk about an intake or a registration process. Was there adequate support to the program? So as you can see, process and outcome evaluation can work hand in hand. So finally, we're going to look at profitable organizations. When we look at the traditional definition of profitable, simply put, a profitable organization is one that has money left over after all the obligations for the accounting period have been paid. Simple math, total revenue less total expenses. So when we look at top indicators of financial health, we can look at income statement indicators as well as balance sheet indicators. Your income statement tells you all of your revenues, so if you're getting money from grants, if you're getting money from government contracts, individual donors. So it lists all of the money that comes in, but it also lists expenses like salary expenses, supply expenses. So all the money coming in, all the money going out, and what's left over is your gain or loss. So organizations that have strong financial indicators, at least as far as income statement is concerned, they have reliable revenues. So an organization is able to reliably predict its revenues on a consistent basis from year to year. The revenue streams are relatively stable, so they might differ, you know, about 3 to 5% per year, and there are consistent surpluses over the year. The revenues cover the full cost of doing business and not just the operations. And when I say full cost, I'm talking about day-to-day operations, you know, things like salary and rent. Also looking at debt service, you know, which is the money it takes to pay a loan, and depreciation on your equipment. So if you have enough money to cover all of those costs and then have some left over, you're in pretty good shape. When we look at balance sheet indicators, and your balance sheet, as you may or may not know, it shows things like your assets, your liabilities, and assets minus liabilities is your equity. So ideally, you want to have strong asset coverage. That means the ratio of your assets to liabilities. So in the best of all worlds, you have an asset ratio to liabilities of about 2 to 1. So that means for every dollar going out, you have about $2 in assets to cover it. Coverage approaches 1 to 1. That means for as you get to a point where every dollar coming in, you have $1 coming out, or even worse, the ability for the nonprofit to provide quality services is compromised. You know, because money that would be used for programs and services has to go to repay debt, you know, for things that have already occurred in the past. So generally speaking, nonprofits should have enough unrestricted cash to cover at least 3 months of expenses. The Nonprofit Finance Fund did a survey, you know, of nonprofits all around the country, and they found that about half of them had about 3 months or less cash on hand. So that means more than half of our organizations, you know, if they didn't get another dime for the next 3 months, they could be in danger of going out of business. So I see that we have basically exhausted our time. I want to say thank you so much for listening to Nonprofit U Blog Talk radio show. The show is going to be available for download within about an hour. And make sure that you tune in next week when our guest will be Kate Pereira. Kate is the founder and academic advisor of UIC Online Certificate Nonprofit Management Program. And she's going to share not only an overview of the program, but she's going to discuss the next five things in nonprofit management. I'm looking forward to a lively discussion and hope to see you next week.